Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a special trade deadline edition of Lakers Explained, a show we haven't done in quite some time. And I don't know, really, it should be called Lakers Speculated, because that's all we're going to be doing today. And that's really all we can do, given what we know about the Lakers' plans at the trade deadline. I'm joined by Harrison Fagan. Harrison, how are you doing today, sir?
You know, I'm doing well, Christian. Look, you say that we can't explain any of this. I think we can explain the speculation, and it's nice to be back with you. I feel like, you know, once in a while to mix it up, we got to go back and do the show that we told people we were going to be doing on a weekly basis. And now it's like once a month, once every 2 months or something like that. But I know that you like Jacob better than me. And so I've been trying to pair you two up a little bit more. I know that I can tolerate Anthony better than anyone else on this network. Correct. So trying to pair us up. And, you know, we've made it work. Anthony hates the Lakers Explained name, but I forced him to adopt it. So that is no longer just our pod. I'm sorry. But, yeah, you know, I'm doing well. I'm feeling as rested as I think someone can be heading into trade deadline madness week. And, yeah, I mean, we're going to try and cut through the noise, and it's going to be crazy, though.
One of those statements, me liking Jacob and you tolerating Anthony better, is true. I will let you guess which one, but not right now, because we have better things to talk about. Chief among them is the news that came out today from Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report, who I want to quote this because everything can get lost in phrasing at this point of the season. So, verbatim, his report says, Charlotte has also called the Lakers about Montrezl Harrell, Los Angeles bruising center, sources said, and the reigning champions appear willing to entertain offers. Let's start there, because I think with how much noise there is around the Lakers and their interest in Andre Drummond, and the fact that LeBron James is going to be sidelined indefinitely, probably a month, I think trading Montrezl Harrell makes more sense now than it ever has. The question is, do you think it will happen?
I don't, and I'm interested to hear your take on why you think it makes more sense than ever, because I think that honestly, with LeBron going down and AD still being out for who knows how long, they're reevaluating him on Friday, but you know, Haynes reported that it could be at least another week after that or something before he comes back. It's kind of more the timeline that the team is internally targeting. And so I think that with those two out, honestly, the Lakers need Trez now more than ever just to try and steal a couple of these games. This injury could not have happened at a worse time for the Lakers because, you know, I know that there's been some talk nationally about, will this make the Lakers be more aggressive at the trade deadline? Like, I'm just not sure that making a trade that makes you kind of either worse with LeBron and AD, you know, because it's a less complimentary player. Like if you're bringing in some guy who's just basically you're bringing him in to get up shots. Like my thing is the Lakers have guys that can take on bigger roles than they are. They just aren't going to win a lot of games with those guys taking on bigger roles than they are, but they're also probably about the caliber of the players that they could get. You know, I on the low post today, they were theorizing. Lowe was saying the only trade that he had found that he actually even liked a little bit was like Evan Fournier for KCP and the Lakers first rounder. But if I'm the Lakers, I'm not trading my 2027 first rounder when you don't know if you're going to have LeBron or AD anymore at that point for Evan Fournier to play for 2 weeks until LeBron comes back. Like to me, and even Lowe said that he didn't really like it that much, but it was the only one that made some sense. And the problem is, you know, besides Trez, who's one of the guys that they actually really need to step up right now, in my opinion, they don't have a lot of high salary contracts, and their only high salary contracts are either guys in LeBron and AD who they obviously aren't going to trade, or Montrezl Harrell and KCP, who do not have no trade clauses, but by, you know, by virtue of being represented by Clutch, kind of have no trade clauses, or at least don't trade me to a place where I'm not going to be happy or have a chance to ball out and get paid or whatever. And so I'm, again, I'm curious to hear why you think that now is the time to move Trez, because I think for just, he's a productive NBA player that can put up numbers and kind of get you some offense during this time. I think they actually need him more than they ever have.
I think that's true in a vacuum, but if you're operating under the assumption that the Lakers are going to get Andre Drummond, which I am not a believer in. I do not think the Lakers will get Andre Drummond. I think the Nets have a bigger role and more money to offer him. Maybe, you know, this is the part of the podcast that gets clipped and I get dunked on for doubting the Lakers for and doubting Rob Pelinka for not believing he can get Andre Drummond. But I think it more has to do with, if you're getting Andre Drummond, Montrezl Harrell becomes more expendable. And with how much help I think the Lakers need on the wing right now, it's been an issue all season, in my opinion. But with LeBron James out, again, at least a month, I think you're going to need somebody to fill in at that spot. Kyle Kuzma can probably fill in, but he didn't look like he was exactly up to the challenge against the Suns. Wesley Matthews is another guy who has the length to guard big threes, but again, you know, not just on Sunday night, but all season, he hasn't exactly looked like himself. So,
He's had like two good games, I feel like, right, his entire time with the layup. Like, and that might even be stretching it.
And so I think the dream, and it's been reported as such, Woj had a report on Get Up on Monday morning saying that the Lakers are more looking towards the buyout market than they are the trade deadline. And they think they can, you know, find a difference maker there, which I think makes sense. If you're going to look for some help on the wing, I think, you know, you look at a guy like Otto Porter from the Chicago Bulls, who has been rumored to maybe get a buyout. That's a Lake that I think even before LeBron James injury, that's a player the Lakers would love to have. And I'm not saying the Lakers are going to get Otto Porter. I'm not saying the Lakers are going to get Andre Drummond. But I'd say it's more likely that they get a contributor on the buyout market. That being said, if you are to get a difference maker at the trade deadline and your position of need before LeBron James' injury and especially now is help on the wing, I think Trez is the guy you move. And, you know, worst case, if a guy that they really like becomes available, you know, maybe you have discussions about a package centered around Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Montrezl Harrell. But at that point, you're looking at not just a starter, but like a fringe, like all-star.
Yeah. So it's funny because I think that, like, in terms of what he can bring and whether or not he'd really be worthy of playing over Trez and Marc Gasol, I think I'm probably not in the camp. I'm probably in the minority in that I don't think that Drummond would be a gigantic add that, like, fixes a bunch of problems for the league. And again, this is pending how Gasol looks when he comes back. Right. That's a big if. And so, but if he looks, you know, about how he looked for most of the season, which I know to most people think that, oh, he's playing like garbage. It's like, that's not how I was viewing things necessarily. And I'm not sure that Drummond, you know, for all, and again, he's literally might be the greatest rebounder in NBA history. I was looking at some number, like he has the highest rebound percentage in NBA history, higher than Dennis Rodman. He's eighth in rebounds per game for his entire career average. Like, he is an incredible rebounder. He's not super great at very much else. And so I'm not as certain that they necessarily need him. I am, I think, a little bit more confident than you that they have a really good shot to get him. You know, I think it's a very realistic possibility that they're going to be the team that he ultimately chooses to join when he, you know, when or if he gets bought out, if he doesn't get traded and stuff like that. But that said, you know, let's talk about Trez a little bit and the center position as a whole, because outside of Drummond, like, you know, who are the guys that they've been linked to? They signed Damian Jones to two 10-day contracts to kind of, you know, my theory on this is honestly that they signed Jones less for Jones and less like to get a body, but more to see just what that type of player would look like alongside their guys to decide if they wanted to add one that was maybe, you know, with all due respect to Anthony, a little bit more NBA caliber, can maybe have a little bit more versatility, a little more talented, and get what, and what a traditional center like they had last year would look like alongside this roster, and whether or not they wanted to do that. And you look at the names that they've been connected to, they most likely can't get JaVale McGee back, but he's a name. You know, they've been connected to Hassan Whiteside. They've been connected to Andre Drummond. They've been connected to Miles Turner. Again, these guys are all different players, but in broad strokes, they are larger centers that are different and a little bit more mobile than, you know, what the Lakers have had this year. Like Montrezl Harrell is obviously as mobile as centers come, but he's not very defensively strong. He's undersized. Marc Gasol is as big as any of these guys, but definitely not as mobile and not what you would consider a lob catcher at really any point in his career. And so, you know, when you look at all of that, it's clear that the Lakers are targeting a certain type of player that is being linked to them in every single rumor. And this is from reporters across the league. You know, this is clearly something the Lakers are digging into. There's too many commonalities here and too many different people reporting it that it's something they're strongly considering, obviously. And so that makes me the next step in that line of thinking is, if they're looking at these guys, do they really think they're going to play three centers alongside Anthony Davis? Like, probably not. And then, so if you're like, okay, well then who would they move on from? They're not going to cut Gasol. I mean, they're up against the hard cap. They basically, you know, bent over backwards to get him to sign here and recruited him. And I just, like, you know, I don't know that they would do that in terms of cutting him. He's also really cheap and would be tough to trade for that reason and get much of value back. But the guy that they could use as salary ballast is Harrell, which is why this report about Charlotte being interested in the Lakers being open to at least listening to offers was, I think, a notable confirmation of something that if you read between the lines, you could kind of expect for a while. And I just wonder, like, now with LeBron going down, I think it's tougher to make that move. But I do think that it's something that, you know, they should at least look into and see if there's someone. You know, Woj reported that they're looking to fortify this team for the stretch run, you know, alongside LeBron and AD. And does that mean having Harrell? Like, I'm not sure that that's the guy that makes those two guys better. And so are you better off trying to trade someone? Maybe a team, maybe another team needs that production a little bit more to kind of give their lineups a little bit of extra pop, and you get someone back that's a little bit more of a complementary player alongside those guys, because it's not like you can make your trade deadline moves based on the next couple weeks while LeBron is out.
Right. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I'll start with Montrez and his trade value. The tricky thing with Montrez and finding him a new home is, one, you're operating under the assumption that the team that trades for him is a contender who just needs that little extra push off of the bench. Boston's, I think, a great example of somebody that I think could use Montrezl Harrell in a big way.
Could you imagine the Lakers and Celtics making a midseason trade?
I don't know. It's either they haven't made a trade ever, which I don't think is correct, but
I believe they've made a trade. It's just, it's, I don't think, like, they've ever made one midseason. Like, yeah, it's very rare.
It's also been, I think, like 3 decades since they've made a trade, if I remember the stat correctly. But it's going to be somebody who thinks that Montrez can help them this season, and not just thinks that, but needs Montrez to help them this season, because, you know, they're racing up against the clock of either a head coach they have under contract or a GM that's trying to save his job. That is the type of team that Montrezl Harrell would likely, most likely, land with. The other issue with trading Trez is he's not going to have his bird rights next season. So any team that trades for him needs to be a cap space team, or is just going to be okay with him walking next season. I find those two things together very hard to believe and to construct a trade around, but it's certainly possible. And I think if the Lakers were to move on from Trez, I think you're looking at, you know, ideally, again, some help on the wing. I don't know what that trade would look like. I know a trade that I saw on my timeline the other day that I thought was interesting. I don't know if I'd do it, but I thought it was interesting, is if Houston was willing to part with Victor Oladipo for KCP and Montrezl Harrell, knowing that Victor Oladipo is more capable of carrying the Lakers while LeBron James and Anthony Davis out than Harrell or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is, and knowing that Oladipo is a better fit, arguably a better fit, than Harrell or this version of Casey is alongside LeBron and AD when they get back, is that a trade that the Lakers consider?
Ooh, that's an interesting one, actually. I've seen a couple people propose Oladipo as like someone, you know, I've had people in my mentions saying to go after him. And, you know, it's like, I'm not sure how feasible that is. And also, he's like not been good mostly for the Rockets. Mm-hmm. He's had a couple high scoring games here and there, but for the most part has kind of been a shell of himself. And again, it seems like that's kind of happening to everyone in Houston. So I'm not going to completely hold that against him. And obviously that is a pretty big talent upside in terms of a move that you could do. And especially if he does show up and look better alongside LeBron and AD, I believe, you know, he was pretty transparently like buddying around with those guys and like buddy and palling around with them in the bubble, you know, after that game and whatever, when he was still trying to get traded from the Pacers. So, you know, you do wonder about when there's smoke, there's fire. But, you know, again, I just question the realism, not even just of the move, because I think the move is, you know, I think it's a worthy gamble, at least. Like, I would respect the home run swing of it, especially since KCP has, again, he's underwhelmed for most of the season. My issue with criticizing KCP is not criticizing him for his season-long play. It's criticizing him for last night against the Suns when no one really looked good, and I didn't really expect anyone to look that good, and it was the second night of a back-to-back and whatever. Like, you know, but anyway, all that aside, I think it's a worthy home run swing. I just question whether or not the Lakers would actually ship two clutch clients to arguably the worst organization in the NBA.
Yeah.
Like, strong argument for worst organization in the NBA now that the Knicks seem to be getting it together.
I think the fact that John Wall is there and, you know, getting three clutch clients in.
Rich Paul could run the Rockets. Yeah. Here's an angle. I like this.
Typically, all it takes is one or two clutch clients to turn an organization around, as evidenced by the Lakers championship run last season. I don't know if it's a trade they would do. My point is, and I think the larger point about the Lakers center position that you mentioned earlier is, you know, Anthony Davis, when the postseason rolls around, is going to be playing a lot of center, and
it's not going to matter. Like, right. Those are the two options. Either he's doing it or the season is lost anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
and I mean, last season, the Lakers won a championship with the center rotation of JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, and Anthony Davis. You know, with all due respect to JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, who I think played a pivotal role in the Lakers' success in the regular season. When the postseason came around, I think Lakers fans have this, like, this memory of McGee and Howard particularly, of being the saving grace for the Lakers when it mattered in that series against Denver. And I agree that having a big body to throw on Nikola Jokic was helpful in that series. I think Marc Gasol will have the same impact on Nikola Jokic in that Denver series when it rolls around. So,
or at least close to it.
Right. And I think that the overarching point is, if you're to get rid of Montrezl Harrell for somebody who, again, it can't at most or at worst has to be a lateral move, because I don't think you can get rid of a player of Montrezl Harrell's caliber. Somebody I think is a very good player and a type of player, especially without LeBron James, that the Lakers really need. Because the only players that can create their own offense outside of LeBron James and Anthony Davis seem to be Dennis Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell right now. Talen Horton Tucker gets hot on some nights, but for the most part, it's those two guys. So if you're the Lakers, it has to be, one, a lateral move. It has to be at a different position. And if you're rolling with, you know, Montrezl Harrell for an upgrade at the wing, and in the postseason you have a center rotation of, you know, Drummond, Davis, and Gasol, I think that's a center rotation the Lakers can easily win a championship with. So, I am not against the Lakers trading Harrell, but again, I think it's going to be tricky, not just to find a trade, but for the Lakers to talk themselves into trading somebody that has been so valuable for them. You know, again, and even more so without James and Davis in the lineup.
And look, hey, this could happen by the time this podcast goes up, because Harold tweeted an eyes emoji shortly before we went on the air. And, you know, all of this whole discussion could be moot when we find out that he is actually a Hornet by the end of this podcast or whatever. And so, you know, I just wanted to leave room for that. The one thing that I tried to do while listening to the points that you were making was see if I could make a DeMar DeRozan trade of some kind work, just because that feels like, it still feels like the most Lakers move of all time to get DeMar DeRozan. It's just tough because the Spurs are over the luxury tax threshold, and so it's hard to make that trade work with DeRozan.
Yeah, it would have to be like KCP, Harrell, and... Oh, God, no. It doesn't work. I was going to say KCP, Harrell, and Wesley Matthews, but DeMar DeRozan makes $27 million.
Yes, exactly. it's tough to make it work. And, you know, they can't have too much aggregate salary coming in. So, yeah.
That's tough. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk more trade deadline goodness.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
So the other report that came out earlier this week that caught my eye a bit and I think has kind of flown under the radar is the fact that the Lakers... according to Brian Windhorst of ESPN, he reported the other day on SportsCenter that, quote, the Lakers have been involved in some talks for a guard. Their big play is if Andre Drummond gets bought out from the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're hoping to be in the front of the line to get Andre Drummond, end quote.
Christian, I'm just going to stop you right there. There's a lot of people talking about Drummond, a lot of insiders talking linking Drummond to the Lakers and not to the Nets.
I mean,
I'm just saying it's interesting.
Here's the thing. I think there are more reasons for Drummond to play for the Nets. If he has a preference to play for the Lakers, it's like the Kawhi.
Unless he hates his former teammate, Blake Griffin. Let's get that rumor started. Well, chemistry issues in Brooklyn already.
It's like the Kawhi Leonard to the Clippers argument, right? Why would Kawhi Leonard play for the Clippers when LeBron James and Anthony Davis are with the Lakers? Well, because Kawhi Leonard wants to play for the Clippers. The Lakers fans are probably going to hate me for comparing the Clippers to the Lakers in any sense, but I think if Drummond ends up with the Lakers, it is absolutely because he prefers playing for the Lakers as opposed to the Nets. Because again, the Nets have the money to offer him, and right now they're starting Jeff Green at center. So
yeah, you'd think, like, theoretically they have everything, the money, the role, but it's just, I don't know, it's interesting that they just keep getting linked to Andre Drummond, and the Nets almost never are almost never mentioned in that conversation by people who are very informed on these things. It's interesting.
Let's get back to this guard talk really quick. If you look, so... It's funny that you talk about the guys that the Lakers have been linked to, because there was a one-off rumor the other day that to me made no sense. Not just the player that they were tied to, but the phrasing of the report.
Was it DeMar DeRozan?
No.
I'm telling you, we're going to make it happen.
There was a report the other day, and again, completely out of the blue, a name I don't think Lakers fans have thought of for quite some time. But, God, I'm procrastinating on this because I don't want to butcher his last name. John it's bad. He covers.
It's Krzyzewski. Just go with that.
John Krzyzewski.
I believe it's John Krasinski is how his name is pronounced. I'm 90% sure, but I could have just butchered that. So I will butcher it so that you don't have to.
John Krasinski, senior writer for The Athletic, covering the Minnesota Timberwolves, reported that he's hearing the Lakers and the Bucks are among the teams to watch if and when IT gets another shot in the league. That report is so funny to me because it's saying, I don't know if Isaiah Thomas has a future in the league again. There's no guarantee he'll ever play in the NBA again. But if he does, the Lakers and Bucks are interested. The Lakers it's like and Bucks the Lakers, have an
you
interest.
You know what that report means? You know what that report means? It means that the Lakers and Bucks were the two teams that called Isaiah Thomas's agent after Team USA and were like, hey, good job. That was cool. Maybe, you know, maybe come, you could come work out for us at some point or something. Maybe.
But that,
we'll call you.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Because the fact that any teams are interested suggests that Isaiah Thomas has a future in the league. Like, what are we doing? But I think the fact that Isaiah Thomas is like the big name on the free agent guard market right now speaks volumes about the guards that are available in the open market right now. Going down the line, you have Kyle Korver, Jamal Crawford, guys who, again, our names, don't know if they move the needle for the Lakers in any meaningful way. And for that...
Oh, man, can you imagine they just signed Jamal Crawford to a 10-day? He has, like, 10 30-point games. Or, like, not 10 in 10 days, but he gets, like... He has, like, two 30-point games, puts the Lakers over the hump, and then they just let him go when LeBron comes back. Like,
listen, I can neither confirm or deny that I would buy a Jamal Crawford Lakers jersey to wear to Summer League 2022. That's going to be
my... It would be like a Rasheed Wallace Hawks jersey, like right. An all-time jersey to own.
But for that reason, I think because of how barren the guard market is right now...
It's bad.
Like Jeremy Lin's another name who I think should probably get another shot in the NBA. I just don't know if the Lakers are that team.
Bring back Dion Waiters. This is what I've been saying. He knows the playbook. It's time.
Honestly, just bring him back so he doesn't sign with another team and give away all the Lakers secrets.
Exactly. Bring Champ Cheese in. You could bring him off the bench. He can teach Talen Horton Tucker some new tricks. Like, you know, I don't see why you don't do this move.
I think if the Lakers are going to make a trade, I think it will probably be for that guard that they're targeting, somebody to round out their roster, not somebody who I think is going to be playing like 20 minutes per game. The rotation's tight as is. Markieff Morris expressed frustration with his role with the team, and he started a finals game last season. So it's tough.
He's also now like Frank Vogel, Frank has done to Markieff since AD and LeBron, especially now LeBron went down, is like when you catch a kid smoking and you make them smoke the whole pack. Yeah. Like that's what he's done to Markieff after he complained about his minutes. He's like, oh, you want more minutes? Like how's 40 a game sound?
Yeah.
And you know, hilarious. Honestly, out of spite, it's worked. Like now Markieff is playing great. So, you know, it didn't have the intended effect, but you know, it still worked out nonetheless.
The name I think a lot of Lakers fans have been looking at, and I think part of it has to do with the fact that he used to play for the Lakers and seemed to, you know, have a successful stint during that time. I think he started a few games, and that's Wayne Ellington. And Wayne Ellington's actually had a few opportunities to come back and play for the Lakers, and he hasn't. Like, he signed a weird deal with the Pistons. Does he play for the Pistons right now? He does.
Yeah, he still plays for the Pistons, yes.
He's played for just some, like, bottoming teams in recent years. That just hasn't made any sense.
Actually, that was Jody Meeks. I'm mixing him up with another former Lakers legend that had, like, the serious injuries. That was not Ellington.
Jody had some... Wayne Ellington had a great year, and I believe it was Brooklyn, and has had interest around the league ever since. The Lakers are in a position, I think, with Alphonso McKinney's veterans minimum contract and whatever second round pick they have, to get Wayne Ellington. And you know, that can probably be said about a lot of end of bench guys on teams that just seem headed towards the bottom of their respective conferences. Hassan Whiteside, I think, is another guy. If the Lakers offered the Kings Alphonso McKinney in a second round pick, yeah, I think they could get him. But Wayne Ellington's the one I think is, you know, probably not going to hit the buyout market, just because teams are always in the market for shooting. And Wayne Ellington, if nothing else, is a great shooter. I'd love to have him back on the Lakers. I think he'd be a great
fit. Yeah. I think he'd be that's exactly the type of guy that, you know, when Woj had that report about them trying to get guys that can succeed around LeBron and AD versus guys that, you know, are going to just kind of play a limited role while those two guys are out, he was honestly the first name I thought of, because he's one of the few names that, like you said, he could probably be had for relatively cheap, because the Pistons are probably just going to go in the tank and try to make themselves as bad as possible down the stretch. And although, who knows, because they have a new GM, so maybe he wants to try and see if they can overachieve, but they've really dropped off after, I think, playing, you know, above their heads for the first couple weeks of the season. And I actually was under the impression that Ellington had like a random 40-point game for the Lakers at some point, but I looked it up. His season high with the Lakers was 28. So that's this. I must have mixed him up with Meeks. The Lakers, two like veteran shooters that year that would just randomly get hot at times in the D'Antoni offense. But yeah, I mean, Ellington's exactly the kind of guy that, you know, the only thing, honestly, that makes me wary about it is, I don't know if there's something the Pistons are doing. Like, I don't know if they're, like, we need to do, because not that many people watch Pistons games, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, are we sure that they aren't goosing their guys' stats? Because, you know, we saw this happen with Reggie Bullock, where, you know, he's shooting the lights out, he arrives in LA, and all of a sudden he's trash. Like, you know, and, you know, he's not trash. His percentages were very bad. I'm sorry. Reggie Bullock is a very nice man. I should not have said that. I instantly felt bad the second it came out of my mouth.
And and he's playing well for the Knicks, so got to give him his flowers.
I'm sorry, Reggie. But, like, are we sure that the Pistons are not faking some of their box scores to try and get, like, free second-round picks out of the Lakers? Because this is how they got Svi, and, you know, I'm not sure that I want to fall into that trap again if I'm the Lakers. But in all seriousness, I think that is exactly the kind of guy that they should be trying to be adding. I don't love the Whiteside idea, just because I really don't like I'm probably one of, even among the internet, which I feel like does not appreciate Hassan Whiteside's game, I think I'm even lower on that spectrum than, you know, the consensus. And I just really don't think that he can help a winning team. I just have never really seen it beyond that one time when he was playing for his NBA life with the Heat and ended up getting a max contract and then kind of phoned it in for the next like 10 years. And so I'm not in love with the idea of adding him. But again, it's like, if you can get him for a second round pick and Alphonso McKinney, then, you know, it is what it is. Like, whatever.
I think the reason I have a soft spot for Hassan Whiteside, because I too at one point was fighting for my life in a job and then lucked into just like stability. So shout out to Hassan Whiteside. Look, we did it.
Hey, everyone in the blogging industry can relate that. I just didn't immediately start phoning it in after, but I'm also not getting paid millions of dollars and have like guaranteed contracts. So,
but yeah,
like you'll know that I finally got paid when I stop actually like writing stuff and like digging into it. And I just do the undisputed bits on Twitter. Like that's when I finally got my guaranteed contract.
But yeah, Wayne Ellington is a guy I would very much like to see back. And you joked in our Silver Screen and Roll Slack today that Svi is just sitting around, you know, kicking tires in Oklahoma City.
Hollinger said, you know, he likes that idea for the Lakers. And so, like, that makes me somewhat hesitate to do it. But, like, he also, like, he made a good point that the Lakers probably could get him for not very much. Like, let's bring Svi home. You know, that's not a bad, again, that was not reported, but that's a good idea. You know, just anyone, basically, my philosophy at the trade deadline is if you could get someone for like a second round pick or something, go ahead and do it if you think that there's a chance they can help your team. Because Alphonso McKinney is, you know, again, with all due respect to Alphonso McKinney, who has never once complained about his role, you know, finally getting a chance to play some for the Lakers, I don't think he can really help this team when things are going to matter. So why not try and get a guy who can use that salary, use a second round pick? I don't care. Even with the Lakers success later in the draft. I don't care that much about those. I'd rather try and make a move that you think improves your chances, even 1% or 2% of winning a title, a guy that could help you in a playoff game, whatever. I don't think Alphonso McKinney's that guy. So I'm totally on board with making, you know, using his contract in a second to get something done. I just, if I were Rob Pelinka, I would be extremely wary of trading that 2027 first round pick, especially unprotected, because that is like that's probably after the LeBron and AD era at that point.
That's a fake year. Who knows if any of us will be here by then?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe none of us will make it to 2027, and so he should just do it. But, you know, if we do make it to 2027, that would put the Lakers in kind of a bad spot, potentially, if that is, like, their rebuilding year. And, you know, we all just lived through this with the protected picks and the stressing out on lottery night and all of that stuff. Like, no one wants to go through that again.
Yeah, maybe it was bad that the Lakers didn't, like, pay the ultimate price for those moves. It ended up just being, like, you know, late lottery picks and a few second rounders. Maybe they should have, you know, felt the excruciating burn of losing out on a high lottery pick so they don't make the same mistake.
And Rob wasn't involved with that, so maybe he's just like, what's the worst that could happen? You, like, lose the pick or have to sweat it out on lottery night and I get fired after I give a huge contract to Luol Deng? That'll never happen. And then, like, lo and behold, in 2027, he signs, like, a 53-year-old Luol Deng to a max deal on the first, like, minute of free agency and just gets fired.
So, I was gonna say, we need Luol Deng's first contract to come off the books first before any of that happens.
Yeah, he's like still like the fifth highest paid player on the Lakers this season. Finesse King, like,
shout out Luol Deng. Before we go, Harrison, two things I want to touch on. Number one, I want to know, I want your final prediction on the Lakers trade deadline. Do you think they will make a trade? And of all the players on the roster, who do you think will get traded?
I mean, I kind of just answered that, but I think if they're going to do anything, I think it'll be McKinney. I think it's going to be a fringe move. I don't think, especially at this point, now that LeBron gets down and they really do kind of need him for the next 2 weeks, I think they would have been, I don't think that trading Trez would have been an easy decision, and I think it just got a lot harder. And so I wouldn't bet on that. But again, you know, if this team thinks they can get Drummond, or they're, you know, that we could say thinks in quotes or whatever, but the reality is the Lakers probably know already whether or not they're getting Andre Drummond, because that's just how the NBA works now. Is you're just like, the first rule of tampering club is you just don't admit that you're tampering. But, you know, suffice to say, whatever team is signing Andre Drummond, if he gets bought out, probably already knows who they are. And so if the Lakers know they're getting Drummond, then, you know, maybe you do make that move. But again, that's also complicated by the fact of, we don't know what Gasol's going to look like when he comes back from health and safety protocols for 2+ weeks. And if this is going to affect him, like, in his conditioning and all of that stuff. So I just think it's hard to make a big move now with a guy like that you really potentially do need. And so if it's anyone, I think it'll be like McKinney and, you know, more of a fringe move. I mean, where are you at?
Yeah, I think where I've settled on, I wouldn't be shocked if they traded Montrez, but if they did trade Montrez, I think my Andre Drummond, like, my internal stonks on Andre Drummond to the Lakers would just skyrocket, because I don't think they make that move without, you know, some idea that they're going to get Drummond. And I think that's really the only scenario where it makes sense. So I think McKinney in a second for Wayne Ellington, that's what I'm putting my money on, but not actually, because I don't bet, because that is a slippery
slope. No, you got a guaranteed contract now. You just told the people you can bet now. You're financially stable.
The last thing I wanted to touch on, and so the Lakers announced on Monday that 11-time All-Star and Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Famer Elgin Baylor passed away at the age of 86. You and I were too young to watch Elgin, but just knowing what you know, and you having written earlier in the year during the off season about, you know,
during the stoppage, during the middle of the season off season
part one. knowing his impact with the Lakers and the role he played in not just their success on the court, but their success off the court and ability to stay in Los Angeles, what will be your lasting memory of Elgin Baylor, the basketball player and the activist?
So the thing that came out to me most when I was, because this was when we were doing our Let's Appreciate a Laker series. And so I really took some time. I dove into Elgin Baylor's story, and it was one that I kind of wanted to read up on for a while, because you always hear, like, everyone's heard, oh, Elgin Baylor underappreciated, like the most underappreciated great player of all time and all that stuff. So I really wanted to take some time, dig into kind of what made his career so notable and what made him so notable. His game, in a lot of ways, was ahead of its time in terms of, you know, just for the time. I mean, he's 6'5", so he wouldn't be a bigger wing in today's NBA, but for that NBA, he was a bigger wing. And, you know, just the rebounding, yeah, kind of like point forward type stuff that he was doing from, you know, for a guard at that time, or, you know, an off guard at that time, the quote unquote off guard, was kind of unprecedented. And a lot of great players that came after him has kind of cited him as a guy that showed, like Michael Jordan, I believe, has talked about, you know, watching him, and like Dr. J came out today and talked about watching Elgin Baylor growing up. And, you know, there are a lot of guys that get a lot of credit for moving the game forward that, mm-hmm, you know, they learn, like Elgin Baylor walked so that they could run.
Yeah.
He obviously, you know, if you go back and watch the highlights, he doesn't look like a modern day NBA player, but mm-hmm, skill training was so much lower back then. Like what he was doing was basically like time travel for those people. And like, you know, for that league. And we always have to judge these guys in the context of when they played and all of that larger stuff. And you know, he had some of the most extraordinary context, I think, of any NBA player ever, in that not only was he he was a member of the first Los Angeles Lakers team coming from Minneapolis to LA to join that team and play for them. You know, the owner of the team at the time basically said that if Elgin Baylor had not signed with them, they might have folded. So the Lakers literally may not exist. And it does show you one part of like how, you know, how financially unstable the league was back then. This was not a guy that was making millions, that had all this time to train, whatever. Like, you know, he was still a transcendent talent, and literally kept arguably the greatest franchise in sports history. Now, like, the Lakers may not, there's an alternate universe where Elgin Baylor doesn't take their offer and the Lakers don't exist anymore, potentially. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he deserves a ton of credit for that. I also think that, you know, he was an athlete that spoke out against like injustice at a time when it was not as easy to do that publicly as it is today. Not that it's easy today, but it is easier than it was at that time. I think, like, right, it's, you know, no one would argue the opposite. And the other thing, there was a season where he averaged almost 40 points a game while playing only on weekends because he was serving in the Army Reserve, and he would get a weekend pass to go and suit up for the Lakers. Like, can you imagine that today? Of like this is not some fringe player that's just like missing it. This isn't like when KCP missed away games one season or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a guy who is literally in the military while he's playing, and, you know, like showing up on weekends to play for his team, but during the week is getting a DNP, active military service. Like, can you imagine if LeBron was just not playing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday because he had to sit, like, stay at training at an Army Reserve base? You know, it's just, it's insane how different the league and the world was back then. And I do think that he just, you know, I'm glad that I wrote that before he died, and I'm glad that the Lakers gave him a statue before he died, right, because,
yeah,
I think one of the things we've all talked about over the last year, you know, with Kobe and then just with the way that the world has been, is giving people their flowers before their funeral. And, you know, I'm glad that he at least got to start to feel some of that appreciation. He got onto Twitter at like 85 years old and was jumping on and interacting with Lakers fans and live tweeting the games like a fan. They did a jersey tribute to him this year already, you know, and so I just think that it's really great that he got to at least get some appreciation before he passed away.
I could not have said it better myself, my friend. Our thoughts are with his wife, Elaine, and his daughter, Crystal, and anybody in his life who is affected by his death. Rest in peace, Elgin Baylor. That'll do it for our show. We will catch you all again whenever we do this next.